Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold-cut combo, veggie delight, or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're tuning in to the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. This week on the show, we meet Alvin Lim, a man who faced adversity, turning it into a driving force for his next adventure in life. Being wheelchair-bound does not stop Alvin from aspiring to compete in hand cycling at the Paralympic Games in 2020. While that particular journey will undoubtedly be stuff of legends, how he got here in the first place is equally inspiring. Being adventurous is in Alvin Lim's blood. He was a flight attendant working with Singapore Airlines, and one of the hobbies he had at that time was riding superbikes. An activity that is as adrenaline-pumping as it is dangerous. One day, on a ride to Singapore, an unfortunate incident happened to Alvin.
I was working with Singapore Airlines as an air steward at that time. I was on a motorcycle. I was on the way back to Singapore. Truth is, the actual accident itself is kind of foggy. I remember I saw a Petronas tanker. I slammed on the brakes. I couldn't stop in time, so I just tapped it. I lost my front wheel. I went rolling on the ground. And, you know, the impact actually was very slight, because when they recovered my motorcycle, about the only thing is that one foot peg was broken and the fairing was cracked. That was it. You know, they could still ride the bike. So, and if you look at even my clothes from what I was wearing on that day, it was totally intact. I didn't have my jeans ripped or anything like that. And outwardly, there was not a single scratch or bruise on my body. But what happened was it was an internal injury, you know. And I remember, in fact, when after I hit the tanker, I knew I was on the highway. I was lying down on the highway. The first instinct was, I've got to get off the highway. You know, cars are coming. And when I tried to get up, then everything just went black. And the next thing I know, I was woken up at the side of the road. My friend was already there. He woke me up. And I had a lot of difficulty breathing. In fact, it was like I was drowning, because actually what happened is all the blood filled up in my lungs. So that's when I knew, you know, I was in trouble. I've had accidents before, but never anything that severe. Basically, what happened was I suffered an injury called a ruptured aorta. That is actually the same injury as Princess Diana. So the amazing thing was they couldn't save her in France, but in Malaysia, you know, they managed to save me. And if you ask most doctors, when they look at my report, they all shake their head. And, you know, I look at them and say, yeah, I know I'm not supposed to be here, you know, because most people don't survive injuries like that. So because of the ruptured aorta, I actually lost a lot of blood. In fact, they actually had to replace about 6 liters of my blood over the course of the surgery. And because of that loss of blood, you know, the nerves in the spinal cord, some of it died off. And that's what made me paraplegic. I was in a hospital for about 2 months before I was allowed to go back home. And then I think back home, it was, you know, probably about a year of just, you know, getting sort of accustomed to my situation. Well, of course, it was tough at first. I mean, you know, I was 25 years old. I was at the prime of my life, you know, had a good job. I was having fun with my bike and all that. And, you know, then you get an accident and you end up in a hospital bed and you can't even walk. But I think I've been the sort who's never really dwelt on things very much, and I don't feel sorry for myself. I just looked at it as, well, you know, if I were to get upset, to get angry, will that help my situation? You know, if that does, then by all means, you know, go ahead. But, you know, at the end of the day, you make the best of what you can, right? And so I just look forward and it's like, okay, I'm probably going to be in a wheelchair for, you know, a good part of my life now. How do I move on from here? That's how I approached it. And then, yeah, from then on, I think it was pretty much go, go, go.
While recuperating, Alvin seek for alternative medication in the hope that it will make him walk again.
We tried all kinds of things, you know, acupuncture, traditional massage, acupressure, the whatever kinds of herbs and medicines and all that. But I think the real driving force behind that was actually my parents. You know, that's why, you know, I took that sort of long before I sort of rejoined, you know, society. So, yeah, it was for about a year plus that we're doing all that. But it came to a point where I said, you know, I can't be chasing after this, you know, for the rest of my life. You know, my life has to go on. I still have to work. I still have a career to think about, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's great if we find something that makes me walk again. But, you know, I'm not going to sit around and wait for that day to happen. You know, in the meantime, I'm going to do my own thing. You know, life has to go on.
Moving on from that life-changing experience was never going to be easy. Alvin dipped his toes in a few other industries before eventually settling for the auto industry.
I tried all kinds of things. I was trained for the hospitality industry. Obviously, it's not something that I can really go back to being in this situation. So I actually tried a few things. I did my own business. I worked for friends in the business. I tried network marketing as well. And finally, got into sales, car sales in Toyota. Yeah, and that was the start of my sales career. So 10-year sales career with the auto industry. Interestingly enough, you'll be surprised, I think it's an advantage to be in a wheelchair selling cars. Simply because when a customer comes in and they meet me, chances are that they're not going to forget the guy in a wheelchair. Most people, when they go shopping for cars, you know, they'll go to a few showrooms, you know. And after they've gone to a few showrooms, they probably won't even remember the first salesperson that they met, you know. But with me, I think chances are they'll remember me because I'm different, you know. So that was actually an advantage. Being in Malaysia with the kind of people that Malaysians are, they're actually very compassionate. So everywhere I've gone, I've always had loads of support from my colleagues. You know, obviously there are some things that I can't do, you know, and when I'm in a wheelchair. You know, they're always happy to step in for that. But by and large, most of the things, you know, I can do on my own. So it was all right. It was actually a lot of fun.
Life as a salesman was definitely rewarding for Alvin, but eventually he decided to call it a day and take a break in Australia. That's where he rekindled his interest in biking, albeit in a slightly different form.
It started with I was visiting my sister in Australia. After I decided to quit my job as a salesman and move on with the next stage of my life, I decided to go for a holiday there first. So it was a nice 3-month break in Australia. So while I was there, I thought it was a great opportunity to get myself a new wheelchair. So I went and had myself fitted for a new wheelchair, and the place that sold the wheelchair had a hand cycle. And the guy did the salesman thing on me, you know, and he says, well, you know, no obligation, take it and try it. You know, we'll let you have for a few weeks. You know, just try it out, no obligations. And, you know, if you don't like it, just, you know, return it to us. And stupidly, I said yes. Then, you know, the moment I started cycling, I just fell in love with it. And so bought myself one. And I was cycling around in Australia for the 3 months. And then when I came back, I brought it back with me naturally and started looking for places to cycle here.
Hand cycles are pretty much self-explanatory. But how much of a bicycle is in a hand cycle? And since now Alvin is pedaling solely with the use of his hands, I wondered, is the learning curve to ride a hand cycle steep?
I wouldn't say it's really a real learning curve because I cycled before, before my accident. So I understand the mechanics of how a bicycle works. And by and large, a hand cycle works exactly the same way as a bicycle. In fact, I would say most of the components are actually taken directly off a bicycle. But the only thing different is the frame, and you are in a sort of seated position, you're in a prone position. How you change the gears, how you pedal, how you brake, all this actually comes from a regular bicycle. Well, a hand cycle like the one that I'm using, it would be classified as a recumbent. So it's got 3 wheels, one big wheel in the front and 2 in the rear. And you are sort of in a laying down position in between the wheels. The crank, where you would normally pedal with your legs, mounted in front of me, and I use my hands to pedal. At the same time, where the handles are, I've got the controls for the brakes and also the shifter to change the gears. And you also steer with your arms. So just, yeah, turn right to go right, turn left to go left. That's about it.
Hand cycles, like bicycles, also comes in different types and ranges. There are recreational hand cycles, and there are also hand cycles that cater to a more competitive environment.
Well, definitely you have the recreational hand cycles, and then you have the ones that are used for sports. Generally, the recreational ones are, you're seated in a very upright position, so it's a very relaxed position, and the way they're geared is to make it easy for you to cycle, and not so much for speed. So, but when it comes to the competitive cycles, you know, the game is speed. So, you know, we generally have two types of hand cycles. The ones, the recumbents, like the one that I'm using, where you're basically using only your arms and your shoulders to power. And then you have the other hand cycle where you're actually seated again higher. These are for people with maybe that amputees. They may not have limbs, but they have actually trunk control. So they are seated higher on the cycle. The crank is actually positioned below them, so they can actually use their whole upper body to push down on cycles. So that is a different category. But generally, you have like these two categories for sports. The one that I have is actually a recreational cycle, and that would be, I paid about 12,000 ringgit for it. If you're looking at a proper competition bike, you'll be looking in a region of about 15,000 to 16,000 euros. And with cycling, you know, it's always Europe that's the forefront in terms of cycling. So yeah, they come up with the best stuff.
Alvin's attraction to hand cycles was not just an infatuation, as he also believes it's a useful recreational tool to maintain his health. But what started out as a recreational activity soon turned into something competitive.
It started out, you know, just as something to do recreationally and just to get me in better shape, in better health. But when I started cycling in Malaysia, one of the things is I came across the paracycling coach in one of my cycle rides with a friend, you know, and then we remain in contact. But as to why I actually decided to go this, you know, you have to go back a little bit further, back in the days when I was actually a salesman. I was with Volkswagen as a salesperson, and they had this internal competition. It was a worldwide competition. I managed to win it for Malaysia. So I represented, and we went to Germany and competed for the world title. I didn't win the world title, but I managed to win for the whole of Asia. So that experience, being in that environment, being in a competitive environment with like-minded individuals, it was actually quite electrifying. And it was an experience that till today, I always look back fondly at. So when we talk about the hand cycling, suddenly there was an opportunity to be in competition. And what, you know, better sort of arena than actual sports competition, right? And I thought about it and I said, you know what, this is definitely something that would be of interest to me, and, you know, decided to give it a shot.
Alvin's dreams and prayers to compete at the highest level came true when he was roped into the National Paralympic team.
What happened is I was cycling by myself for about a year here in Malaysia. And then, as I mentioned to you, I met the cycling coach. We kept in touch. And it was only towards the end of last year that he said, you know, hey, would you like to come and join us for, you know, some training sessions? So I took him up on the offer. From 1 day to 2 days to 3 days, and the next thing I know, I was training with them every day. And then I guess they probably see a little bit of potential there, so they offered me an actual position in the team. And then so since January 2017, I'm an official member of the national team. When you're doing it competitively, when you've got a coach and you've got a coach behind you yelling at you, you know, you tend to push a lot harder. The distance that we do, the speeds that we do, you know, it's all amplified. I thought I was pushing myself when I was doing it recreationally, because I mean, I always have targets. I always set benchmarks for myself. You know, I want to cycle further, faster, things like that. But I think I wasn't even really quite prepared for that until to be in an actual environment, because when you join the national team, you know, those guys are at a totally different level. And you've got no choice, right? You just have to do it, or, you know, you get left behind.
In his short time there, Alvin has already been exposed to a grueling training regime. But that, according to him, is still only the tip of the iceberg.
We pretty much train 6 days a week. It's a combination of cycling indoors, outdoors. And then most days, we actually have two sessions, one in the morning and then a gym session in the afternoon. So the gym, of course, we will be focusing on weight training to build up the muscles, to give you more power. And of course, on the come to Saturday, then usually it's a proper long ride outside. So it's a mixture. But from what I understand from coach, what we've been doing so far, that's just general preparation. You know, we haven't got to the hard stuff yet.
So far, Alvin is the first and the only hand cyclist in the national paracycling team. Surrounded by teammates who are cyclists, how does hand cycling serve as a piece of jigsaw in the puzzle?
I am the first, and they didn't count for me, but it was actually a very easy adjustment. I joined the team. I've got my own hand cycle, so it's a matter of just loading it up in the van and, you know, going out with the boys. Naturally, I'm not as fast as those who are cycling with their legs. So most of the time, we train separately. So I'm with either one or two coaching staff doing the hand cycles. On those maybe longer rides, then we go out together as a group. But we generally even start at different points so that, you know, we can meet up, because there's a very obvious speed difference. And I'll try and keep up as much as I can with the guys, but, you know, a lot of times I get dropped.
Considering his background as a non-athlete, Alvin is pragmatic and realized how much effort he needs to put into the sport.
Once I said I would go into this, you know, all the way, that was the target, and that's what we're aiming for. I have been training, and we've been training hard to get there. Unlike most, maybe, athletes, I'm very late into the game. I'm 42 years old this year, you know, and this is the first time I'm getting into competitive sports. On top of that, as you can tell from my size, I'm not the fittest person in the world. I used to be severely overweight. And when we started training, I've actually lost about 12 kilos in about 3 months. Yeah, and I still have at least another 12 to go before I'm at the ideal weight. So I guess it's a twofold task, you know. One is to get myself, you know, competitive, but also, you know, to get myself in the shape to be competitive, because, you know, I'm coming from a background of not being an athlete at all, you know, to now someone who wants to compete.
One of Malaysia's most memorable success stories last year was our Paralympians bringing home 3 golds and 1 bronze during the Rio Paralympics 2016. Was that watershed moment a driving force behind Alvin's aspiration to compete in the Paralympics 2020?
Even before Rio, when I decided that I wanted to go for this, I definitely, you know, in my mind, the only thing I was thinking about was Paralympics. You know, you aim for the stars, right? You know, so that was definitely a goal right from the start. Thing is, I had no idea how I was going to get there. I don't know if I will get there, but, you know, I told myself that's the target you set for yourself, you know. But yeah, as it is, you know, it's still a very long journey. Right now, our first target is actually SEA Games, the Southeast Asian Games. We are the host nation. That's going to be in September this year. So that will be the first step. That will be the stepping stone. And the performance then will determine my future in the sport.
The Paralympic Games have always been served as a follow-up to the main Olympic Games and usually garner less attention than its more glamorous sibling. We asked Alvin what he thinks about the sudden rise of Paralympics in our consciousness, especially after our success in Rio 2016.
I think that's generally true of, you know, everywhere in the world. Naturally, when you think of sports, you know, the first sport that comes to your mind isn't any para sport, right? And even when I was in Australia, I saw that, you know, they had to do a lot of promotion of their para athletes as compared to, you know, their regular able-bodied athletes. So this is definitely something that is, I think, is a phenomenon worldwide. But minds are changing, hearts are changing. You know, people are starting to notice. I don't think it will ever get to a point where it will surpass, you know, regular sports. But, you know, maybe in time we will at least get the same kind of distinction and recognition.
Moving forward, Alvin believes that the public needs to be steadfast in their support in order to give para sports more prominence.
Well, that would actually depend on the general public. What we need is their support. When we have the games, come out, you know, support us. That's what we need, because that's at the end of the day, when there is support for these games, there will be interest, there will be televised broadcasts and things like that. But until the desire is there and to the point where people want to watch it, it's never going to be mainstream.
That was Alvin Lim, Malaysia's first hand cyclist in the paracycling team. If you would like to hear his inspiring story again, you can download our new BFM app via Apple's App Store and Google Play. You can also share your thoughts by tweeting us at BFM Radio. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Hanif Baharuddin, and you have been tuning in to the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week for another episode of I Love KL on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or black forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.